Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. Welcome to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples and the Squamish-speaking peoples. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded territories of the Halkamalam-speaking peoples and the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples. And at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie. Ooh, it's been a week. Mentally, I am all over the place and simultaneously checked out. But the weekend before, I don't really know how people calculate weekends, to be honest, but I saw The Wedding Banquet with my friends. This movie is Andrew Ahn's 2025 remake of the 1993 Gaijin classic of the same name, but directed by Ang Lee. And I had such a good time watching this 2025 version that I wanted to talk about it, and I wanted to compare it to the 1993 version, which I saw a few months ago, in preparation, mind you, for this 2025 version. So that's what today's episode is going to be. It's very gay, it's very Asian, you know, two of my specialties, and on today's playlist, it is also gay and Asian. It's music by queer people, and if they're not queer, then they're Asian, and if they're not Asian, then they're queer, and if they're not somehow both, they're one or the other, keeping it on theme. And we will begin with a classic by the Mandopop diva of the world, Teresa Tung. Ye Lai Xiang, Night Jasmine.
Goodbye. 听叫，喜就喜欢晴朗天，去去去去去去去，听见喜鹊就欢笑，去去去去去去去，听见喜鹊就要欢笑。
Is Bird Note. The Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary in Northwest California is an important stop along the Pacific Flyway, one of the four main routes for bird migration through North America. Great birding and trails through the marsh are a big draw for both locals and tourists from around the world. But community steward George Zeminski says that many people are surprised to learn that this wildlife sanctuary is also the city of Arcata's wastewater treatment facility.
You know, and they're wandering around over there just looking at all this beautiful stuff going, where's the sewage treatment plant?
In one part of the site, a treatment facility removes solids and sludge from wastewater. After the initial cleansing steps, the water flows into wetlands where microbes, algae, and plants finish the job. This is how the city of Arcata has turned its treated wastewater into a refuge for shorebirds and other wildlife.
Coastal wetlands and marsh habitat have been filled in and built upon through much of the West Coast. All those fields used to be intertidal and marsh. It's really nice allowing some of these fields to revert back to being habitat for the fish and the birds.
These Arcata wetlands provide homes and migratory resting places for over 300 species of birds. Even the most unlikely places can be transformed into a thriving ecosystem. For Bird Note, I'm Jesse Eden.
Whatever it is, you know that it's sweet. Yeah, yeah, sugar. taste like sugar. Pretty baby.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. That's Callous Way with Sugar off of her album A Kid from Toronto. Before that, you heard Xi Chue Jiao, The Magpie Calls by Fang Jingying here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. My name is Leslie, and we are going to talk about the Wedding Banquet, both versions. Mostly with an emphasis on the latest version. If you are unfamiliar, let me break it down for you. So The Wedding Banquet originally was this 1993 movie by Ang Lee, and it's considered like a Gaijin classic. It is about a Taiwanese-American man named Wai Teng, who lives with his devoted boyfriend Simon in New York. Wai Teng's parents want him to get married, but they don't know that he isn't attracted to women. And they keep setting him up with these single eligible bachelorettes when Wai Teng is just like, I need to not be married. I have a boyfriend and I'm in love with him. But at the same time, he doesn't want to come out to his family. He hasn't yet. He's not sure how to, especially because his family is pretty traditional. Mind you, this is the 1990s, and his dad is, you know, this like typical kind of Confucian patriarch, where he watches over the family and he's the guy who knows best. So Wai Teng's in a bit of a pickle. But one of his tenants, because Wai Teng is a gentrifier, one of his tenants, Wei Wei, is from Shanghai. She's an artist and her visa's about to expire. He and Simon hatch a plan. What if he marries Wei Wei and she can help him out by pretending to be his wife, and he can help her out by helping her get a green card. So he goes and announces that he is getting married to this random woman. He tells his parents about it. And they're like, but you're going to have a wedding, right? Like, you're not going to get married without a wedding, right? Do you understand? Like, this is a part of our tradition. We must. And so he and Wei Wei have no choice but to throw a wedding banquet. Shenanigans ensue. Wei Wei becomes pregnant with Wai Teng's child, and in the end, Wai Teng has no other choice, essentially, but to confront his father and let him know, yeah, he's queer, he's gay, he's not actually interested in Wei Wei at all. And he hopes that his dad can accept him, which he does. And it's a happy ending. It's, I think, maybe a little bit more of a family dramedy than anything else. But it is considered like a queer Asian classic. in the sense that, like, it's got this big name Asian director behind it, Ang Lee, who also did Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, which is an excellent film. And it touches on these films about gay Asian American life. And so give it 30 years, 32 years or so, and you get a remake by Andrew Ahn, and he makes a film of the same name, which was recently released in theaters. The Wedding Banquet 2025 follows Angela and her partner, Lee, who are trying to get pregnant through IVF. And it also follows their best friends, Chris and Min. Chris is just a guy, and Min is his devoted boyfriend whose student visa is about to expire. And Min's grandparents, who raised him, are demanding that he returns to Korea so that he can inherit their big ol' company. Lee's IVF treatment, this is the second time that she's gone through it, this, you know, really, like, expensive thing, and unfortunately, it's not successful. Lee is getting a little bit older, and under ideal circumstances, they would have enough money, and maybe Angela would be the one to carry their next try, because after three tries, you know, like, it's just not recommended to do it again, apparently. And the first and second tries were a no-go. Lee wants nothing more than to raise a family with Angela. And Angela loves her partner so much, but is very afraid of becoming a mother because she's got mommy issues. So Min and Lee hatch a plan. Okay, Chris won't marry Min because he's afraid of commitment and a bunch of other things. And Angela is really not into the idea of carrying another child, and Lee and Angela don't have enough money to go through another treatment of IVF. So Min is going to marry Angela and pay for Lee's IVF treatment. Min happily tells his grandmother, okay, Grandma, I am getting married, so therefore I'm staying in America, and sorry, there's nothing you can do about it, I'm in love. And his grandma's like, are you sure she's just not trying to marry you for your money? Okay, I'm gonna come over, I'm gonna see what this girl's deal is. And really quickly, she unravels the fact that the whole thing's a sham. But because she can't have Min get cut off and kicked out by her husband, she goes along with it and says, you know what? We'll throw this big Korean wedding banquet, and we'll have, like, Korean press come and take photos to show your grandpa that, yeah, you have indeed gotten married, and you don't have to come back to Korea to run his company. We'll figure it out instead. Shenanigans happen. Many a miscommunication. It is more of a rom-com than a family dramedy. And in the end, Min and Chris get married. Lee and Angela's IVF treatment is successful, and Angela is also pregnant. And so the four of them raise a concoction of a biological and chosen family. Big ol' queer biological and chosen family. And it brought me to tears. Watching The Wedding Banquet 2025... One, nothing that I love more than being in a theater full of gay people, which was exactly the vibe of that day. Two, sobbing, weeping, multiple points throughout this movie in a way that I truly would never would have expected, because I did not feel that intense of emotions when I was watching the 1993 version. And so in the later part of today's episode, I'm going to break down maybe the reasons why I got really emotional about this movie. But for now, we're going to listen to some more music. Here is a track by Flash Flood Darlings. This is Sail. Enjoy.
This is Bird Note. Sailor and artist Brecken Morgan circumnavigated the globe solo. Alone on the vast expanse of the Pacific Ocean, he welcomed the companionship of a swallow-tailed gull.
There was this bird that came to visit me in the morning, kind of flew around me and then flew off. But in the evening, it came back. And I remember coming up a number of times at night to check my bearings and the set of the sails, and the bird was flying off of the bowsprit in front of the boat like a little shadow of moonlight floating back and forth almost all night long. And this happened for a number of days in a row. There's this loneliness that happens when you're far at sea, and I felt I had a companion. I felt I had a friend. I tried to let it know that it was welcome, as much as you can when you talk to a bird at sea. I always expressed my happiness to see him, and it was a particularly comforting presence.
Brecken saw other birds on his voyage, too.
They were friends in the middle of the void, amazing visitors that I couldn't understand how they managed to get 1,500 miles from the nearest piece of rock and survive, but obviously they were more ancient mariners than I would ever imagine being. Whether I made those birds as happy as they made me, I'll have no idea. but they did make me very happy.
You can see some of Morgan's paintings of his voyage on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
You are
Lucy Dacus with Best Guess. Before that, you heard Holland with I'm Not Afraid here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. Best Guess, obviously, one of the best music videos of 2025, calling it early. And I'm Not Afraid by Holland. Holland is often known to be the first openly out K-pop idol. He debuted quite a number of years ago, actually. And from the moment of his debut, he declared basically like, I'm gay. My music is going to be for gay people who might be struggling and for gay people who want to party. And I'm Not Afraid, I think, is a very nice song. I'm talking about The Wedding Banquet, 2025, but also 1993. And yeah, there are going to be spoilers in today's episode. I didn't mention that before, but they're going to be spoilers. And I think one of the reasons why I enjoyed the 2025 version so much, again, sobbing in front of many people at the theater several times throughout the film. I think that it is a really grounded portrayal of the way that queer Asian people navigate life. And at the same time, it is just really unapologetically queer. Whereas in 1993, I think it's a little bit different. That doesn't mean that it's bad. 1993's version of The Wedding Banquet, I think, serves a really good purpose. It is the 1990s, and for the most part, I think that movie is actually speaking to a cis-hetero audience. I mean, the resolve of the conflict really is that, you know, the patriarch of the family approves of the main character's sexuality, the main character being the patriarch's son. And the other thing about the 1993 version as well is that just in its most basic form, you know, it is about the life and struggle of a gay Asian man who needs to try to like negotiate his identity, feels that he has to negotiate his identity in order to receive familial acceptance. But he himself also seems to struggle with his own acceptance of himself. The concept of like his true identity comes into there a number of times. But the fact that it is this really, I think, empathetic portrayal of this man feeling like he needs to hide a really important part of himself from his family, only to then receive unconditional love and support from the family. I think in 1993, four straight audiences is really radical. For cishet audiences is really radical. But that also means that for me, I guess, a person who, you know, I was born in the 90s, but I also have seen the ways in which queer media representation has changed. I've also seen, I think, like, little steps of progress in terms of like cultural and social acceptance of queer people in East Asian communities and in much of East Asia itself. The thing that makes 2025 exciting for me is that it is really, really removed from the need of approval of that patriarch. In fact, there's basically no patriarch throughout the movie. I'll talk about that later. But the exciting thing I think about 2025 is that it highlights it's really, okay, this is gonna be kind of convoluted. If you're Asian, if you're queer and Asian, write in. I'm typicallytuesdays@gmail.com, or you can send me a DM, typicallytuesdays on Instagram. The thing I think makes it really grounded and really Asian is that this movie is very much about family in the same way, in the same way as the 1993 version. It's just that family looks different. It's just that the concept of family is explored in a different way. And that, I think that it is really unapologetic in claiming both parts of, like, the identity of this movie being a queer Asian movie. I'll talk a little bit more about that after this music break. Here is Hold Me Down by Nunla.
I'm
My Heart Dreams by Black Belt Eagle Scout here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. Hi, I'm Leslie, and yes, I did cry several times while watching The Wedding Banquet 2025, directed by Andrew Ahn, and I'm going to tell you why. This movie, I felt like, was just kind of life-affirming. As a queer Asian woman, I felt like the movie itself was really grounded in the experiences of a lot of queer Asian people. I think he does so by highlighting the fact that love in all of its forms, it can be very complicated, because as human beings, we are complicated and we are flawed and we do things that we're not proud of, and all we can do is try to make up for it. And that's really portrayed throughout the film, especially with the couples, you know, with both Min and Chris and Lee and Angela. There are multiple points where they will have conflicts and, you know, they'll like try to make up afterwards, communicating. I mean, like, it's really basically the very last minute, it was like a big conflict with these couples. But it also, you know, just because they had a fight, just because they had a disagreement, just because they might not be ready to be on the same page, doesn't necessarily mean that they don't love each other. They do. It's just the fact that love can be so scary. It can change you in ways that you're not prepared to. It can make you do things that you are not ready to do, and it can make you doubt whether or not you're ready to do those things. But most significantly, and I wrote it here in my notes, it says, "Thesis: Andrew Ahn presents a new Gaijin classic in its embracing of family values from an Asian and queer perspective." This movie does something so well in that it manages to highlight the fact that, like, familial love is so definitely and so always so complicated. I want to level with you here. Okay, actually, so here's what I mean, right? Like, you know, one of the things that's really interesting about this movie and really refreshing is that there really isn't a single biological family presented in this movie that is the traditional nuclear family. Like, Angela was raised by her single mom. Min was raised by his grandparents because his parents both passed away when he was young. Chris is the father figure of his also adult cousin, and then, you know, in the end it all accumulates to these two couples coming together and raising this like communal biological family in some ways. So it really takes out that kind of like patriarchal figure that's really present throughout 1993. And in that way, I think it's really interesting, because that seems actually very queer, right? There's no patriarch, really. In fact, the most prominent familial characters, biologically familial characters, are the matriarchs. But really importantly, Andrew Ahn doesn't let us fall into this trap that says, you know, if your biological family rejects you, then you must lean into your chosen family, who are way better and more accepting than your biological family. That's kind of the narrative that I grew up hearing a lot when I was a younger queer Asian woman. The idea that, like, if your family rejects you, you must cut them off. And you must find your people in the outside world. That's not to say that that's not the truth for some people. obviously it is for a lot of queer and trans people, and you see that happening often in queer and trans Asian people. But this movie also shows us this theme that I think that's like kind of adult and kind of mature, which is that biological family, chosen family, doesn't matter what it is, both are complicated. There are these beautiful scenes revolving like reconciliation between Angela and her mom, and also Min and his grandmother, and one, sobbing openly in the theater, but two, you know, it's kind of life-affirming, because how many of us have craved to hear those similar words of affirmation from our own parents? And also, how many of us have, right? As I get older, I realize that even though my relationship with my parents is really complicated in the ways that many other people have very complicated relationships with their parents, it doesn't necessarily mean that we can't try to make something work. It also doesn't necessarily mean that they won't eventually try to make it up. In a similar way, with the kind of chosen family in this movie, as I said, we see multiple times throughout, it is not always sunshine and rainbows with them. These are four people who have their own desires, they have their own goals, they have their own confusions and questions about life. And that means sometimes they react in ways that are unpleasant, that can potentially hurt their partners or their friends. They can potentially hurt their parents and familial figures. It doesn't necessarily mean that all is lost. Rather, it means really that these people are human. They're just like you and me. I think that's why Andrew Ahn's film is so affirming, because it really presents this like picture of queer people and Asian people who are not perfect at all. I heard something really funny as the credits were rolling after the movie in the theater. The two people sitting behind me, they were like, I didn't like any of these characters. I hated all of them. And it really tickled me, because I really could not help but to fall in love with every single one of them. They felt so real. They felt so grounded, because they're not perfect. Because they are simply trying to make it through life in the best way that they can. And trying to do good by themselves and other people. These are people who are surrounded by love, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's always easy. It simply means that it is an integral part of their lives and being human. I'm going to leave that there for today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you go check out The Wedding Banquet, both versions. Again, 1993 is pretty cool, but 2025 is my favorite version. Quick note on content, if you are not into jokes and gags and shenanigans about essentially two drunk people who have intimate physical relationships with each other while drunk, maybe avoid both movies, because a big plot point is about that. But other than that, they're good times. Tune into more great CJSF programming. Check out Bitcoover every Tuesday from 8 to 10. Vancouver's only chiptune broadcast. It's a really, really fun time. Last week's show was like all like kind of like Nintendo music, which was really, really cute. And there's more of that stuff to come on the program. Bitcoover every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10. My name is Leslie, and I'm going to wrap things up with one final song now. The song is kind of just about love. Bro, that's what we want in this world. Here's Haley Blaise with her cover of Sweet Surrender. Here on 90.1 FM, CJSF, typically Tuesdays. I'll talk to you very soon.
Doesn't mean much. Doesn't mean anything at all. The life I left behind me is a cold room. I've crossed the last line to a place I can't return.